Hello, and welcome to the second of a four-part series about liberty and security. This panel discussion was held on March 21, 2002, in Willimantic, Connecticut. It was sponsored by the Northeast Connecticut Green Party. The event was a public forum on the state of civil liberties in the wake of the USA Patriot Act and the ongoing war on terrorism. Speakers were asked to address these issues as they relate to constitutional rights and their effects on Latino immigrants, Arab Americans, and social justice activists.
Our next speaker, Dr. Mazen Kumsia, is Associate Professor of Genetics and Director of Cytogenetic Services at Yale University School of Medicine. He is founder and president of the Holy Land Conservation Foundation and ex-president of Middle East Genetics Association. He won the Jallo Activism Award from the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee in 1998. He is co-founder of Triangle Middle East Dialogue and the Carolina Middle East Association and served on the board of the ADC North Carolina chapter. He is co-founder and currently treasurer of Al-Ada, the Palestinian Right to Return Coalition. His activities most recently include work on the Right to Return campaign and coalition building in Connecticut and beyond. In Connecticut, he volunteers with a local group of activists, including Middle East Crisis Committee, Al-Ada Connecticut Chapter, and Connecticut Peace Coalition.
Thank you for having me. I want to just start by giving you a few glimpses of some things that happened and experiences that I know about of colleagues and friends of mine, and then ask you to think of the commonality of these things that you hear. A friend of mine named Dua El Masri in North Carolina got on the airplane, and he was talking to the guy next to him who started the conversation, actually. And he told him he was from Lebanon, and then the guy asked him, well, what do you think about things? And he said, well, you know, I think the U.S. foreign policy is not that great. I condemn terrorism, but I think U.S. foreign policy is not good. And the guy stood up, walked over to the pilot, told him there is a terrorist on board and you need to get rid of him. And pilot came back and talked to Wael and said, we don't want you on this airplane. And they got him off the airplane and, you know, they didn't accuse him of anything. They just didn't like him. And so they basically had him get on the next airplane. Treated him nicely after about 3 hours of interrogations. And put him on a first class in the next airplane, but he was late, obviously, for going where he wanted to go. another colleague of mine, an Israeli Jewish person, actually, who name is Liad, and was on a bus and wearing a Palestinian kafia, you know, the Arabic Palestinian dress around her neck, And the bus driver was not happy, and he came and asked her to take it off. And she said, no, I'm not going to take it off. It's just part of my dress. I like to dress this way. And he said, no, you've got to take it off or you get off the bus. And she refused and, you know, started argument with him and so forth. The bus passengers folded into three groups. One group who supported the bus driver, one group who just simply moved away from the scene of the confrontation, and one group who simply, tried to intervene and tell the guy, you know, she's just wearing a cloth. You know, what's the big deal? And she's willing to show her ID that she's Jewish, she's not Palestinian, she's not wearing bombs here, you can search me, whatever. No, that's not acceptable. Here in Connecticut, a brick was thrown through a windshield of a grocery store for a Palestinian, an Arab, not a Palestinian store owner. He's from Egypt, I believe. A friend of mine, his name is Muhammad, has two children at school. One of them is in sixth grade. And then the sixth grade teacher came to the class after the September 11 attack and right in front of all the other kids, she pointed the finger. You terrorists, you people, you Palestinians are terrorists. And I could go on and on with tons of other examples, including my own experiences, but you don't want to hear that. But I want you to think carefully about what is the common thread in all of this. What is the common thread? The common thread, in my view, is this idea of duality, that we people sometimes, including us, and each one of us really have to look in the mirror very carefully about when we approach these in terms of thinking, not in terms of humanity and us, but in terms of trying to think of a duality, us versus them. You know, well, who is them? You know, who, you know, when they, people come to me on the street and say, well, you know, because your accent is different, you're not true American. Well, you know, what is American? What is, you know, who are you to be telling me that I'm not an American, you know? Where did you come from, you know? And so it's really, to me, it's this issue of duality, of thinking of us versus them that's very disturbing. And this actually, you might think of it as benign things. Sometimes the incidents are very benign. But in reality, you know, you think of how Germany started down the road of the Holocaust and all this stuff. It started very benign, us versus them. You know, we Germans, we Aryan people. You know, look what they are doing to us. They destroyed our economy. They. Who is they? Then we start pointing fingers at a few other people, and then we started adding those things. And that's the problem, I think. That's down the road for racism. It's down the road for doing atrocities much, much more than simply telling people to get off the airplane and stuff like that. And I would ask us to be very, very careful about what we do here. It is obviously disturbing for us as Arab Americans to hear that, for example, 40 or 50%, I don't know the exact number, of Americans support that Arab Americans should carry special IDs, you know. Think about this for a minute. You know, what's the difference between that and wearing a yellow Star of David on your... You know, it's Israelis now, when they arrested 1,500 people, all men ages 15 to 44 in the refugee camps that they invaded, they drowned all the men and they started putting numbers on their hands, you know, on their arms. Does this remind you of something? You know, we really need to start thinking about what is it that we're doing nationally. And I don't want to take too much time. I'd rather leave things for a question. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Attorney Olinda Morales. Olinda Morales is a lawyer with the Connecticut Department of Public Health and a pro bono attorney with the International Institute of Connecticut, where she represents low-income asylum applicants before the Immigration and Naturalization Service and the Immigration Court, and with the University of Connecticut Tax Clinic, where she represents low-income taxpayers in federal and state tax disputes before the Internal Revenue Service and the United States Tax Court.
Has to go down. Hi, everyone. The tragedy of September 11 has gone far beyond of the horror that occurred on that day. It left a legacy of fear, fear that has become part of the American landscape. It's our reality now. First, the sense of security that the public once felt may never exist again. We now fear future bombing, biological and chemical weapons, and attacks, unexpected. Yet another segment of the population fears something else. We fear to be singled out because of our name, religion, ethnicity, the way we look. One example of this is that we now have the largest number of name changes that we have never seen before. Unfortunately, for some of us, we have such distinct racial characteristics and accents, as you can hear, that we cannot change. Or maybe we don't wish to change. Before I speak to you about the Patriot Act, I would like to point out that before such an act, which took effect on October 25, 2000, everyone in the United States had constitutional rights, to some degree. Aliens present in the United States, or I should say, documented and undocumented people who are not American citizens, had constitutional rights as well. They were protected by the Constitution substantially enjoying the rights guaranteed by the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment, as Teresa Younger just told you. Specifically, the Fourth Amendment affords people the right to be secure from searches in their houses, their papers and effects against unreasonable searches, which means that the government cannot seize you or detain you without a warrant, a properly issued warrant. And no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause. The Fifth Amendment provides that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, and property without the due process of law. At the heart of this freedom from government custody, detention, or other form of physical restraint. Well, these rights have changed. Documented and undocumented people who are not American citizens have lost this right, not only to the Patriot Act, but also through a piece of legislature that has to do with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. It's the amended 8 CFR 287.3 Section D. The old version of this rule allowed INS to make warrantless arrests where the INS officer had reason to believe that the alien so arrested is in the United States in violation of any such law or regulation and is likely to escape before a warrant can be obtained for his or her arrest. The amended regulation, however, repeals the requirement that the INS bring the arrestee in front of a proper examining officer or authority within 24 hours, and it changes for 48 hours. Also, the amended rule provides that in the event of an emergency or other extraordinary circumstances, the INS have indefinite time to hold that person in prison. The INS can do this indefinite detention even when they don't have a prima facie evidence of any violations of the INS laws. The Patriot Act. On October 25, 2001, the U.S. Congress enacted the Patriot Act. Among its various provisions, as you heard earlier, the Act grants the Attorney General the power to detain any non-citizen who is certified as a spy. While the constitutionality of the Act is questionable, it unequivocally limits the Attorney General's power to detain such an individual for a period of 7 days. Unless that person has been charged with a crime or offense or has been placed in removal proceedings. The removal proceeding is nothing more than deportation. If neither immigration proceedings nor criminal charges have been brought against the alien, in quotations, before the 7th day deadline, the statute requires that the AG release the individual. This is awkward, isn't it? I just told you that the INS has unlimited discretion to detain an undocumented or documented person indefinitely. Thus, the combination of the amended regulation and the Patriot Act creates an inexplicable and strange situation where the Attorney General may only detain an individual for 7 days unless that person is certified as a spy or terrorist, or the Attorney General has to order his or her release. And yet, the INS amended regulation that I just talked to you about says that the INS officer can detain a person without his due process rights for an indefinite period of time. For those of us who had studied the Constitution at some length, we know that the amended regulation is superseded by the Patriot Act. However, we are yet to see how the courts will resolve that discrepancy. Unfortunately, what the amended regulations has also done is that it have done exactly what the Supreme Court has said before, that is unconstitutional. The amended regulation is broad, is vague, and it gives unlimited discretion to the government. The Supreme Court of the United States has said over and over again that such laws are unconstitutional and they will not be upheld. I believe that once a case is brought in front of the Supreme Court of the United States, they will deem some of part of the Patriot Act, as well as the mentioned regulation, as unconstitutional. However, it's going to take a long time, and a lot of people are going to be hurt. We already have at least 1,100 non-citizens in jail who have been robbed of their constitutional rights. Thank you.
You are listening to a panel discussion on civil liberties following the September 11th calamity. The event took place in Willimantic, Connecticut on March 21st, 2002.
Our next speaker is attorney Rafael Rodriguez. Rafael Rodriguez is a poverty lawyer in Hartford and has been involved in the struggle for Vieques for 20 years. In May 2000, he was arrested and later convicted for trespassing in Vieques. He is also a freelance journalist for progressive newspapers in Puerto Rico and Hartford.
I think it's interesting of the new times that we're living in this country, something that happened to me the other day. I go to the gym every morning, and I ride a bike. You know, they have a whole bunch of TV sets, and there are people exercising and watching the TV sets. And they usually put it in headline news. So I ride my bike for about 45 minutes, and they keep repeating this same thing in headline news every 8 minutes. The same thing. They're talking about the same thing. So I got off the bike, and I decided to change the channel. And it was amazing how I almost created a riot, because people were really angry at the fact that I had changed a TV where they were seeing the same thing that kept repeating every 8 minutes, same thing. And I think that that's part of the interesting culture that we're living right now. My first reaction today is I think I want to commend the organizers of this activity for bringing together a number of people here, particularly of a minority background, to talk about the issue of civil rights and liberty in the United States. I think that instead of being watching headline news over and over, we should use these opportunities to start a dialogue between people in mainstream America, Anglos and people who live in the suburbs who really love peace, and minority populations. And on this panel, we have a number of minority people. And I say that because the reality of it is that many people don't realize that terrorism for most minorities in this country didn't start in September 11. If you look at the history of minorities in the United States, if you look at slavery, what happened after slavery, segregation, the struggles in the South, if you look at the conditions that many immigrants from Mexico go through on a daily scenario, they fit the definition of terrorism. Terrorism didn't start September 11. I want to personalize this a little bit. My reaction, you know, we all remember where we were in September 11. My first reaction when I saw that is, you know, what's happening? I mean, a lot of people are dying. And as a peace-loving person, I felt hurt. But on the other hand, as a minority, I started thinking, but wait a second. I do understand why people are reacting to this, and why many Americans and people, Anglos, are feeling so hurt and so angry about this. But maybe it's because this is the first time that they feel it themselves. They don't realize that we have gone through that for years and years. Prior to Puerto Rico, and I'm originally from Puerto Rico, becoming part of the United States, there was something in San Juan where the city was bombed by the U.S. Navy. And we had no relationship whatsoever with the United States. They went on ships, they started bombing, 100 or so people died. That was the first act of terrorism against our people, 1898, I think it was in May. So when my reaction with the September 11th thing was, you know, how to understand this from the perspective of a minority, from the perspective of someone who a year before was in Vieques, was arrested by the U.S. Navy. Probably some of you are familiar with the situation in Vieques that will fit the definition of terrorism, where people are dying of cancer, where people are being mistreated, where a number of people have been killed by the U.S. Navy without any consequences to them. So I had this thing that was like tearing me apart. And one of the things that I decided is I went to my home and I started reading Henry David Thoreau. After finishing that, I read Martin Luther King. And I started reading about experiences in the United States, particularly minorities who have suffered so much, and yet they have responded with a peaceful alternative to violence. And I think that it is time that we use this opportunity to start a dialogue with the people who have suffered terrorism in the United States, and for mainstream America to see how many of us have reacted, not by thinking in terms of revenge, not by thinking in terms of simply acting in a military and violent form, but instead acting in the form of non-violent civil disobedience. I'm here actually today to talk about Vieques, and Vieques is connected with that. In the last 2 years, Vieques has been probably the most successful non-violent civil disobedient movement in the United States that is going on, where a number of people have decided that in order to free themselves from a situation which in many ways, like I mentioned, it has aspects of terrorism, where people are dying of cancer, where children are suffering differing illnesses, where people are being precluded from having a normal life, and they live pretty much in a concentration camp. Instead of reacting in terms of violence, instead of thinking in terms of a destruction, what this humble, poor island near Puerto Rico has decided is to use civil disobedience as a way of confronting violence. And I think that's an example that we have to think about, and that mainstream America has to think about. People who have suffered for 60 years in that way, how come they come with an alternative of peace and not of violence? In terms of the impact of the Patriotic Act in the situation of Vieques and minorities, I want to make a distinction. I think we have to start thinking and talking in terms of a new legal regime in the United States. One thing is the Patriotic Act that was approved by Congress. But there has been other measures that were taken and have been taken by other departments or other sections of the government. There have been executive orders providing for military tribunals. That's not part of the Patriotic Act, although people sometimes think that they're all together. There are a number of administrative decisions that have been taken by the Secretary of Justice concerning client attorney privileges, other concerning the detention of immigrants and how much time they're going to be detained. And they're all interconnected, and they all affect in many ways the culture that we're living right now, which is I would consider to be a new legal regime. One important component of that is that we have a Supreme Court that is quite similar to the Supreme Court that we have in 1856 with the Dred Scott case, which was a Supreme Court that was for all matters hijacked by the most reactionary sectors of the United States, pro-slavery, together with the people who were benefiting from slavery in the North, and the Supreme Court became an instrument of limiting civil rights. It became an instrument of justifying and allowing slavery to survive in the United States. We have a Supreme Court now that in some ways we can make an analogy. Most people are not even following many of the decisions that the Supreme Court has been taking in the last few weeks after September 11. Decisions concerning the American with Disability Act. Right now, there's a case before the Supreme Court which could have a significant impact on the rights of workers in the workplace, disabled workers. And the case is called, it's interesting, it's called Echeval v. Chevron. Echeval is a Spanish name, and Chevron, we all know who Chevron is. And one of the sectors are, and one person who has taken a personal stake in this case is President Bush, because he really is supporting the position of Chevron against this worker. So we have a new situation in the United States. It's not only the Patriotic Act. We have the executive, we have the Congress, we have a Supreme Court acting in a way combined to suppress fundamental legal rights in the United States. And we also have to say that they are acting in alliance with the press. It's shameful the way in which most of the media in the United States has reacted in the last few months after September 11. It's shameful the fact that they don't report many things that affect your rights. How many of you are aware of cases that have been decided by the Supreme Court in the last few weeks concerning the rights of police to detain you for frisking you and for a minor traffic violation? The press doesn't tell you that. But they're acting in cohort. We have a unique situation in the United States where I will say that it has created a climate of intimidation. And that's what you saw in the gym. And the devil sometimes lies in detail. But if you go to airports, if you go to different places in the United States, you see people afraid of expressing their views. You see people for the first time afraid of making jokes. You feel people afraid of asserting their rights. The case of Vieques is extreme. After September 11, what the Navy has done in Vieques is together with the federal court in Puerto Rico and together with the FBI, has been to create a climate of intimidation. It's a climate of zero tolerance for social protests. Right now, the Navy is talking about starting bombing in Vieques in April 1st, coming weeks. And one of the things that they did is immediately after September 11, they declared Vieques, where nothing is happening, a zone of a high alert. And interestingly, if you go to Vieques, of course, the media is not going to tell you that. The first thing that they did is they put machine guns pointing to the people. So you have people who for 60 years have been abused by the Navy, people who last year, I was arrested with them, they did all kind of things to us. They threw a pepper spray, all kind of stuff. We remain simply in a civil disobedience stand. We were put in jail. We're people who have no history of violently reacting to the barbarism that the Navy is doing in Vieques. And yet the first thing that they did was pointing machine guns to people who for 60 years have been oppressed by the Navy. That climate of intimidation in Vieques is connected with the fact that we have social protests and we have a civil disobedience movement in Vieques in the last 2 years. But what they have created for the United States is, and you can have my word for this, is that if there's a situation of protest for whatever significant reason in this country, they have created the mechanism to create a climate of intimidation and repression that has not been seen in this country for many years. People are thinking, well, you know, nothing is happening here. Well, the future could be telling as to what would be the impact of these measures. If there's any question, I can talk about that after. Thank you.
So concludes this part of a series on liberty and security after the September 11th calamity. Please tune in again for part 3. This program was produced by George King at the studios of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut. Sound engineering was by John Schwenk. The music used in this program was composed by Dominic Muldowney. Thanks for listening.